Welcome to the Land Investing Business Secret Podcast, where each short episode we talk about the strategies, experiences, and the tools to help you launch, grow, and scale your land business. Learn how to find freedom within your own business, find out ways to build consistency in your processes, and hear how other everyday land investors are winning so you can get to the next step closer to building your dream life through your land business. And I'm your host of the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast by Pebble, Jesse Kwong. Hey, how's it going? It's Jesse here from the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast. I'm so excited to have a returning guest of mine, a good friend of mine, Travis King. Travis has been doing land for such a long time. I kind of consider him one of the OGs in the space. So it's really special to have him on here for this episode because he is getting ready to launch his book. And that's what we're going to be talking about in this episode. And he's going to be sharing his playbooks. And this is one of the great things about Travis is he loves putting frameworks to ideas and building clarity to those frameworks. So anyways, I think you better get a pen and paper out for this one. There's tons of gems that he's going to be dropping on this episode here with Travis King. Enjoy. All right. I've got one of my great friends in land here. He's been a previous guest here as well. Many of you guys might know him, but Travis King. Travis, how are you doing today?
Hey, Jesse. Awesome. Hey, doing great. Thrilled to be here. Yeah.
Listen, I'm really excited to be, I don't know, maybe other people have already talked about this already, but the thing I want to talk to you about is the book that you're putting together. It's called The Land Investor Playbook, and that's coming out on Amazon. It's going to be out on Audible as well. Tell us, you know, before we actually get into the nitty gritty, yeah, what was it like to put together a book? I don't know anybody recently who has put together a book in the land space. And what was that process like?
Well, I would say much like anything, when you venture into something outside your wheelhouse, you know, it always takes, I don't know, 4X, 10X, the effort you would think it would take, right? Cost and effort is always, 4X, 10X, what you would think if you're unfamiliar. So I'd say in time, everything, like it was an undertaking, no question. Obviously with being very niche audience too, right? Like land investors. But what it started with was, as you know, my wife, Becca, and I, within our own land business, would kind of like figure out these new angles or plays. I would call them plays in the playbook, as we would add plays to the playbook beyond like just the micro flip that the majority of the industry does. As we would add these plays like subdividing and so on, I would kind of keep my own like chicken scratch notes. You know what I mean? And I mean, these were crude, right? Everything from a yellow notebook to maybe, clean up a little, put in a Google Doc. But as we started coaching and helping people, it became apparent I needed a little more structure to like, you know, convey or clarify like the exit strategy and how the play worked. So I started spending a little more time on each. And then eventually, like I realized, like I literally have built myself a playbook and my clients a playbook. And it was like one of those things, like, why not share it, right? Why not share it? It's been incredible for us. And the thing has taken, like I said, taken a long time. It's about 2.5 to 3 years from like concept to reality and being published. But the cool thing is some of the plays in there during that time, you know, as markets shift, interest rates go up, there's a number of these plays in the playbook that just are incredibly timely, right? So, it's a blast. And I think it's one of those things that it's not like a science fiction Stephen King novel where we have this massive audience, right? Like it's like at biggest, it's real estate investors and more realistic, it's people focused on land. So it's probably a small audience that's going to reach. But I think those that pick it up, I mean, they're going to understand the value, right, of what they're looking at. We're talking like this isn't some cute little lead magnet, Jesse, or ebook. This is almost 200 pages, approximately 60,000 words. Right? Several plays in the playbook. So that's a legit playbook for land investors. And I'm just thrilled to finally like bring it to market and it go from being an idea to a reality.
So again, we're going to dive into the book here and talk about some of the meaty stuff, but I'm just out of curiosity, what were some of the surprises coming across, you know, actually putting
the book together. I mean, 2.5-3 years, man, you're going to have to stay motivated for something like that. And I know that a lot of people that put books together, it does take a while to do that. And, you know, as me and you were chatting earlier before the show, it was like, yeah, this is prior AI, ChatGPT and all that stuff. But what took you by surprise putting this book together, the whole process? Was there something that just kind of you never sort of expected?
Yeah, the speed at which things move, right? Where quite often, like anytime we're waiting on others, right? For something. So you do your part and then you're waiting on others, meaning like editors and stuff, you know, like going through editors going through stuff and it kind of being like, all right, we're at the next phase, we'll review it, and then you'll hear back from us in 6 weeks. For me, that's like 6 weeks is an eternity. It's like, can't we do this in a week, guys? Right? So like the speed at which things move, you definitely have to be more patient than I'm used to. And then also the considerations, right? Where there, I had a number of, pieces in there that had to be removed, that I thought were great, where in the, just being naive, right? Like I referenced this situation of doing these small deals, right? And I talk about, I kind of reference like a Kanye West lyric about, you know, winning the Super Bowl and driving off in a Hyundai, right? You know, and I make this reference and they're like, we got to remove it. Kanye West will sue you. I'm like, Kanye West is never going to hear about the Land Investors Playbook, right? But they're like, we can't put this in here. You can't use lyrics. So it was interesting. Some of these things that I thought were like, come on, guys, right? And then some of my strategies, I have a strategy I reference like shotgunning or sniping, right? Versus kind of the approach. And you know, the editor said, hey, with the current, you know, climate, like, I don't think with gun violence, we shouldn't have those in there. And I'm like, guys, this is like a real estate strategy, right? Like, come on. So there's some of that stuff where anytime, right, you got to deal with that. I'm just shaking my head. So the formality of it, of going the conventional route, was kind of what surprised me. I'm kind of used to, you know, running your own business, doing things. It's like you hire people, you give them a deadline, you tell them what to do, and we get it done. In this situation, I had to kind of like give up control, like knowing that, hey, like I've got to move at their pace. I've got to follow their lead. I'm new to this. I've got to lean on them, but at the same time, not allow them to change too much, right? To dilute it or water it down. That's the battle.
Oh, that's funny. So you put this book together, and I mean, it's literally called the Land Investor Playbooks and playbook, and it's got multiple plays in there. And I got a chance and thank you for sending me a preview of that. And, yep, you know, sectioning the chapters off by different plays that you have. So before we even jump into, you know, some of these plays, what inspired you, or what led to you to actually create different plays? You know, you mentioned, you know, we've got the traditional flips, the traditional micro flips. So what got you to the point of thinking outside the box? What caused that? And then how did that sort of all come into shape with these sort of, you know, individualized systems that you've built out? What led to think?
Yeah, well for us, it was kind of like play one, chapter one is called the micro flip play, right? And that's the most obvious, what people be the most familiar with. It's kind of that entry point where I talk about you're dealing with market values or full retail value of 40,000 or less. And quite honestly, it's probably much less than that, right? But that's where most of the people that are introduced to land flipping as a business are kind of playing in that sandbox. And that's where we started. And honestly, probably more like sub $15,000. And what I realized was, we banged out something like 70, 73 transactions, I forget, like in our second year. And what I realized was like, okay, we've kind of stress tested like how many transactions we can do. And we're very limited. Like we didn't want to add team and do more transactions. We realized we had to like add a zero essentially, right? Like we had to do bigger transactions and either less of them, but we kind of capped out. So I realized just within our own business model, like, okay, this was a proof of concept. This validated things with these much smaller deals. But to kind of like not get caught in that self-employment trap of just like, you're only as good as your next flip, we had to start looking at bigger deals. So So just within our own business, like when you run all your expenses, you track all your time. There's a lot of times like you don't want to measure, right? Like number of transactions, right? Is not really like a metric. You know, it has nothing to do with profit, right? Like you need to track your inputs, your time. So for us, it was just as we progressed throughout our business, I kind of looked at it like we needed to move up to the next level. And for us, that was kind of when we started moving from like sub 40,000 properties to north of 40,000. And at first we didn't go to where we are now. My second play in the book is like the boss play, which is where we target 40,000 to 400,000. But when we started, it was really just more like 40,000 to 100. You know what I mean? Like we just graduated up and doing bigger deals. So that was kind of like adding that next play to the playbook was like, was targeting bigger deals, making more per deal. But part of that, like the boss play, and you and I have talked about this and we've done other trainings on the boss play where just real quickly, the BOSS, it just says the B stands for bigger deals. When you do bigger deals, the O stands for offering more. As people move up, you're not buying things at 20% of their value, you know, when you're buying $100,000, $200,000 properties. So the B is bigger deals. The O is offering more. The first S is like, stop doing it yourself. You know, stop self-closing, stop self-listing, you know, lean on agents. And then the last S in the boss play is, you know, stop self-funding because you're limited by your own capital and your own means. And most people have, you know, less than 500,000 sitting around and probably much less than that. So the reality is like you can tear through your own money very quickly. So that's what we realized is after we were 2 or 3 years into this was, hey, we've got to like stop doing everything ourselves. We've got to start doing bigger deals. We've got to get outside money and leverage other people's money to really scale this up. So that was kind of like the second play, you know what I mean? Like adding those bigger deals and using other people. So each one of these, I guess you would say like they're a play, but they were also kind of like an epiphany or an aha moment along our milestone or our evolution, you know, as land investors. And things like subdividing was you recognize an opportunity, you learn it, and then it becomes a tool in the tool belt or a play in the playbook. And that's where I looked at like subdividing was really where I go, hey, this is like a play. This is an exit strategy and it's not something everybody knows. So for me, that was just how I viewed it, was like a play in the playbook, right? Like when you're watching a sport, you're watching football, you've got a team, let's say that's like, let's reference, you know, NFL or something, like they're the number one team as far as like running, right? Offense. And then they're doing great. And then they run up against a team, their opponent has the best run defense in the league. You know what I mean? So now all of a sudden you've got this opponent that's like neutralized your strengths. Well, the opponent is the market for us. Like that's the market, right? So you've got this opponent that neutralizes your strengths. So you've got to be able to like dig into the playbook, you know, and adapt, right? So yes, you guys were great at running. You had a strong run game, but you better be able to pass, right? Like if you're going to be playing a team with a number. So that's how we looked at the market is like, you don't dictate the market. You don't get to tell the market what your strengths are and force them upon it. You've got to adapt through the market. So for me, that was like adding plays to the playbook was like, how do I adapt to the market versus being a one trick pony with these small micro flips? And as those get more saturated, you know, it just felt like, okay, we've got to add plays to the playbook. It just kept coming back to like the analogy of a play to a playbook for me. And then initially it was just our own internal playbook, but anytime you share something with others, you have to provide much higher quality and better output than what you're using yourself, right?
Sure. And so this book, this playbook, I mean, there's many playbooks or many plays in this book here. It's a very actionable book. You're going to be able to. I mean, I love those kind of books when they are very, very actionable. And this is what it's all about inside of here. So you've got several plays in here. What are a few? Can you sort of that come off the top of your head? I know you've got a lot here, but that maybe stand out a little bit different or unconventional. Can you share a couple of those with us that you sort of enjoy and you know, find a little bit more on the unconventional side of things?
Yeah, well, I think as a lot of traditional land investors and land flippers, they might not be familiar with assignments or wholesaling. But as we've, you know, as kind of house investors and house wholesalers kind of got choked out of their asset class, right, during COVID, you know, and all these iBuyers moving in, right, with unlimited budgets, Opendoor, Offerpad, Zillow for a minute, right? Like, you know what I mean? A lot of house wholesalers moved from being rock stars to kind of struggling, and they were looking for other asset classes. And, you know, and as they found land, they were very familiar with wholesaling and assigning contracts, meaning just lock up the deal and then source it or assign it for a fee to somebody else. Traditionally, land investors weren't that familiar with that, kind of the old school, and the majority of us weren't. But we started, this kind of was a play that people come in where I would introduce the concept, I'd be training them up, and they'd say, wait a minute, like, I need to buy this outright and wait 6 months for my payday? And then you go, well, yeah, to get full profits, you need to stay in the deal and like, you know, capture all this equity, sell it for full retail. And they're like, no, thanks, man. I just cut me a check, right? Like, can I just assign this contract to you and I'm on to the next one? Mm-hmm. So it was interesting. What I realized was like that land was, you know, there was no difference why we couldn't wholesale or assign land just like house investors do. But I also recognized like that the dollar figures are lower quite often with land deals. So I marry some of these concepts. When I talk about these plays, I kind of conclude the book with how you can stack plays, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning like trick plays. So stack plays. So one of the plays in my playbook that has had the most impact, I think, on people beyond subdividing is the portfolio takedown play. And we've talked about that where it's getting real intentional about targeting duplicate owners or owners that own portfolio properties. The whole status quo was always like, hey, when you pull your list and you're buying data and you're mailing people, like, you don't want to pay, you know, for 10 records for a guy that owns 10 properties, and we don't want to send that guy 10 letters. And it was kind of just always this sacred cow status quo type situation, right? Where when we said, well, what would be the opposite? What if we did the opposite of that? What if we like, we pulled our list and we only targeted duplicate owners, right? So that's the play where like, you're now going after these individuals that own 2, 5, 10 plus properties. Those are much higher value leads, right? And have the potential for these huge outsized returns. So that's a play in the playbook called the portfolio takedown play. And it's really about targeting duplicate owners. Mm-hmm. Now, at the end of the book, I talk about stacking plays, Jesse. And that's where I'd say like that assignment play we just talked about, or wholesaling,
yep,
and portfolios. So a house investor would come over, a household sailor, and he'd say to me, hey, you're right, I can assign land, but on a $50,000 piece of land, I'm looking at a, you know, a pretty small assignment fee, right? $4,000 or $5,000 or something, you know? Like, how do I get to that like 18 or 20 or 25 assignment fee I was getting with houses? So for me, that's where I say like, hey, let's target these owners that own 2, 5, 10 like portfolios of properties, get that under contract. And then the reality was most investors didn't have the money to buy it outright anyway. You know what I mean? So like assigning was kind of the only option. But when we stack these plays where we like intentionally target portfolio owners, we get their properties under contract. We now might have $250,000, $500,000 worth of land parcels under contract. Now we're talking about a big boy assignment fee, which is in the same area as they're used to, or probably even north of that. Yeah. Right. So it's kind of unique. It's kind of interesting. I call them hybrid plays. But what I realized is you could stack a lot of these plays, wow, you know, in the playbook with each other. And it really kind of helps you achieve these outsized returns beyond what most people are used to getting in land. Right.
So in the book, you know, you're going through these plays. Is there, I have yet to actually read the entire thing, but is there a section where you're talking about stacking and mix and matching these and what can potentially work?
Yeah, in the very end, the conclusion, after I've delivered or shared, introduced all the plays, I talk about how to match them. Like for me, one of two of the plays of the playbook, I'll go over them each separately, and then I'll introduce how we stack them. One of the plays is subdividing, okay, where we do minor land divisions. And what that means is we just take an individual parcel, a parent parcel, and we split it into generally four or five. Usually that's the rule, somewhere around four or five, or less child parcels. So we just split the parcel. That's kind of the subdividing play. Like, think of a pizza, right? Like, that's in the book, I talk about that. You could sell a pizza for $12 whole, for example, or you could carve it up, you know, into eight pieces and then turn around and sell it for $3 a slice. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the easiest way to explain subdividing. Okay. We sell the pizza whole, leave it as is, or we carve it into slices, which takes a little effort. And then now we've got this like 100% markup, right? So I talk about that with subdividing. And the beauty of that is if you're a seller financer, you can marry these two plays, run this hybrid play where if your long-term goal is to create notes and create, you know, I don't know, recurring. We won't call it passive. We'll call it recurring. I do recommend using note servicing companies and all this third stuff to make it low hassle. But I also kind of like that word passive is like, I haven't found any passive income yet anywhere. So we'll call it recurring revenue, right? But anyway, the point is like, if your focus is on seller financing and creating like terms income from seller financing, then this is why I started subdividing. Actually, was my goal was like to build up all these notes and this recurring note revenue. So if all of a sudden you take one property that could have resold on a note and you carve it into four or five with the subdividing play, right? And then now you do what I call I call it big league seller financing. Okay, that's the play. People hear seller financing, they go, yeah, I get it. That's not a play. Like, yeah, everybody knows that, right? But like, I share the seller financing after, you know, three or so years in the business, we had to rebuild more intelligently because we started out the wrong way. We started to have a note churn on all these rinky dink 99 down, 99 a month loans that only lasted two or three years. We had to rebuild our whole note business, okay, to get these notes because we were combating note churn, right? So when we rebuilt, the play we added to the playbook is what I call big league seller financing. What I figured out was that the notes we originated, Jesse, they needed to be $250 a month to $1,000 a month, and generally being north of $500. But that was kind of the window we felt like, and the notes needed to be 5 to 15 years long. Because what we found when you do this cheapo properties and 99 down, 99 a month, your first 24 to 36 months in the business is really exciting. You get all these little dopamine hits and you feel like you got all these quick wins. You get 25 to 37 months in the business and all of a sudden, these little micro notes you're originating are dropping off at the same clip you were originating them two, 3 years ago, right? So you either your business plateaus and you have to originate that many a month just to plateau and stay still, or you got to crank it up and do more to grow. That's the spot we hit and realized like, hey, we've got to originate notes where they're 5 to 15 years in length. You know, they're not dropping off. We're not always battling churn. And then two, none of the like, we need to collect bigger downs so that we didn't spend ourselves out of money. Right. So we moved to getting 30 to 50% down instead of that 0 to 10. Right. And then we moved to 10% or more interest, which means all of a sudden we're buying the property. We obviously is, you know, kind of vulture land investors. The goal is we all capture equity. And then the next thing beyond capturing equity, though, is like that interest income. Right. So like, we want that interest income. So that 0%, it's just unnecessary and really only something seen in that micro flip play, right? So we started originating these notes that were $250 to $1,000 a month. Very much. We did a lot of these notes that were like $50,000 properties. We would get, you know, like 15 down, you know, we'd get like 30% down or something. And the payments would be like $725, $775 a month, right? Man, these notes stack up. So I figured like, hey, all right, if we get 30 to 50% down, we charge 10% or more interest. The notes are 5 to 15 years in length. This is what I call like big league seller financing, you know, and that's in the book. So when you subdivide that subdivide play and you marry it with the seller finance big league, right? You're a situation where with one acquisition, you can force appreciation with the subdivide. Then you turn around and sell it off, create four or five notes, and you charge interest income of 10% or more. Like, right? It's an incredible situation. So that's like a long answer, like stacking plays, like stacking the subdivide play with the seller finance, the big league seller finance play is ridiculously profitable.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying this episode here with Travis King, talking all about his strategies and his different playbooks in his upcoming book, which I'm really excited to see come out. Travis actually has been a huge integral part in Pebble and building what we've been building for these last few years, a platform to help land investors get systemized, centralizing data in one place so you can actually build repeatable processes, because repeatable processes are the key to scaling any business. And that's no different for a land investing business. So if you're interested and want to learn more about getting systemized, about having processes, how to buy back time and get out of the operator seat, make sure you head over to pebblerei.com, hit see a demo at the top there, and we are more than happy to connect with you all on getting systemized and building an actual land flipping business. Anyways, I hope you enjoy the rest of this episode. Cheers. I hope you guys, and I say this a lot on the podcast, I hope you guys have a pen and paper out, or you're going to re-listen, because Travis is dropping a lot of gems here. And I love the fact that, you know, you're actually compartmentalizing or giving a framework to these playbooks, because I think it just makes it so much more grounded for people to actually approach and try these things when there is actually clarity and structure. And I think that's what you're trying to bring in with this book here, when you can put structure and build clarity around it. So following that, how and when should an investor try some of these different plays? I know you've got, you know, the micro flip play in there, but, you know, when do they know they're ready? How do they know when to spot the opportunity to actually try it? How do they gradualize into trying this, or do you have to jump both feet in here? I think certainly you having a structure here is going to, and building that clarity is going to be super helpful, but how should somebody get actually started on some of these plays that you've got in your playbook?
For us, and I think a lot of people, it comes like reactively, is like a byproduct of a lead comes in. You see a property and you go, wow, this thing's like much larger acreage than most in the area. It's got roads on a couple sides. I see a lot of other smaller lots nearby. And then your brain kind of goes, well, this would be a subdivide candidate. So it's either a reactive approach where you recognize a potential better exit strategy. So I'll share that with people, that every single play in the playbook came to us as a byproduct of a archaic, antiquated, good old-fashioned countywide mailer, right? So as the property came back, we recognized, oh, wow, this is a waterfront lot, okay? That's a play in the playbook for us, is targeting, I call them trophy properties, targeting a whole play, or like our last play in the playbook is called the trophy hunting play, and it's where we target frontage properties, okay? So I teach you how to target. It could be lakefront, riverfront, canal front, right? Or it could be fronting state land, federal land. Like there's some attribute it's fronting. So I call it a frontage property. There's like an incredible demand for these type properties, right? So that's why I call them trophies. But every one of these things came back to us from as a byproduct of a countywide campaign. So initially, Jesse, like to answer your question, initially it was like a reactive approach in saying, recognizing the property we're reviewing, right, was kind of the approach. But then what we realized was after we bought, executed on the strategy, did really well, and we were kind of like, to keep with the playbook analogy, we were kind of watching game film on what went right, what went wrong. We go, how do we repeat the success? So that's where, and this is the so obvious gold miner tip here, like the gold nugget, like the so obvious thing that people overlook. When something went really, really well, right? Or really, really wrong, like it is looking at it and as if it were game film and saying, okay, what would we do more of next time and what would we do different? So for us, when we were able to pull off a really profitable subdivide, or we did a waterfront lake, like a flip, I would go, how do I repeat this? So instead of now being reactive and waiting for this opportunity to come back to us, I'd go, hey, let's intentionally target larger acreage property to do subdivides. Let's intentionally target only waterfront vacant lots. You know, so I would say, like, the question is, like, it's reactive or it's proactive. You know, you can either recognize the opportunity as the lead comes in and the property comes in, or you can get intentional and seek out these opportunities if you feel like the timing's right. The challenge with the book, and, you know, being a trainer and educator, is in the book, I can't show you where to click. I can't screen share. I can't show you where to click your mouse. So the book, I tried to cover, introduce the concept and deeply and as thoroughly as I could explain within the book, like, what the concept is. And then kind of at the end of every chapter, we did a do's and don'ts. And then I did what I called an executive summary, which was, I feel like as investors and with every play, there's some pillars, you know, there's mindset, skill set, capital, connections, and tools. Those five things, right? And you don't have to write this down. You're going to buy the book, right? And get a highlighter and highlight it. So you don't have to write all this down. But it's mindset, skill set, capital, connections, and tools were like kind of the five things. So every chapter I end with do's and don'ts, mindset, skill set, capital, connections, and tools associated with this play, right? So I think that introduces it to a point where people... well, they may have questions on the execution of, like, hey, what software do I use, or where do I click my mouse, right? How do I do that? But we introduced the concept as best as I could, you know, in text, in a book format. And the reality is, all of the plays are strategies I teach in our Land Boss Mastermind, right? So in the Mastermind, that's where the courses, the training, where I'm actually, you know, we probably got 4 to 6 hours, you know, on each play in the playbook of, like, screen shared training of what data source to use, you know, what letter type to use. Many, you know, some of them are built into Pebble, right? As far as portfolio takedown plays, for example, you know. So within the training is where I'm able to actually share my screen and show you how to do it. But the book is kind of where I can introduce the concept, and some plays will resonate with people more than others. Right. And that's the goal, is that not that once you add and implement 7 plays to your Land Investor's playbook, the idea is that you understand, like, what got you your first line of income, maybe your first 100,000, just doing more of the same isn't the answer to scale, is my point. Right. Much like a restaurant, we've got to have multiple things on the menu. We've got to have multiple products in our land business. So as we have these plays in the playbook, like, you can get, you know, 100,000 or 250 from subdividing, 100,000, 250 from targeting duplicate owners, right? 100,000, 250 from targeting waterfront properties. And these things kind of all add up. But I think the best approach is adding one play to the playbook at a time and kind of getting comfortable with it and mastering it before we move on to the next. You know, as far as implementing it in your land business, because if you got something that's working, the idea is not, like, tear apart your whole offense and add the playbook. The idea is keep doing what you're doing and, you know, test these plays out and add one at a time in an attempt to scale your business up.
I liked how you said that there's sort of a reactive approach. This, you know, a lot of this is going to be a reactive approach, and, you know, this is a playbook I would imagine a lot of people would salivate to kind of have on the side of their desk when something comes through, they're able to refer to. Certainly, you know, when it comes to different kind of businesses or marketing or whatnot, these kind of references are so valuable. And I'm just sort of salivating in my head, my goodness, that's just a really powerful thing to have, that you've, again, brought clarity to, I think is just huge, and brought a framework towards. So, for those of you who don't know and haven't listened to Travis on my other episodes, haven't been on some of the, my gosh, webinars and trainings and Me and Travis once did a webinar, and I was in the middle of an earthquake in Japan. I remember that one. We've done a lot together online.
That was middle of the night.
Yeah. When I was in Japan. But anyways, for those of you guys don't know Travis, and I should have introduced you earlier, you know, Travis, you've been doing this for how many years now?
Well, as a, like a model, the ironic thing, Jesse, is growing up, my dad, you know, my dad subdivided land. So growing up as a kid, you know, I helped clear trails. I walked land and, you know, but had no interest, right? It was like one of those things, oh no, here we go, right? Like we're walking the land, right? And we're using rocks to do our own pre-subdivide, you know, to mark corners. So like I grew up around it, but like anything, quite often, none of us are interested in what our parents do, right? We want to go our own route. So for me, like houses and house investing was a much sexier route to take, you know, and not as dull as land. And it was kind of my own thing. But the reality was, you know, I did a couple land deals with my dad and did really well on them and better than anything I was doing in the house world, you know, and housing can be so volatile, you know, so cyclical, right? Like, let's say that's cyclical. So land flipping was introduced to me about 10 years ago, right? Much like people right now, like, you know, driving on a commute, listening to a podcast. So that's when I became aware of like land flipping as a business model, not just kind of what my dad did was more like buy a larger acreage property. And then over the course of 5 years, like subdivide it and then seller finance it, right? But it was like a long play. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a high velocity, high volume business model. So once I became aware of that for me and we validate it, early on, the biggest challenge was just like, hey, we don't have enough capital, you know, to do this. So that was our biggest restriction. But once I validated it and we did some deals, that was the next question was like, hey, like how big can this get and how fast can we get it there? You know, but yeah, going on a decade and my wife, as you know, works the business with me and is the COO/CEO operator of all of our businesses. So I'm fortunate to have a partner with me, but between us, you know, 10 years each, right? We've been doing this now and been coaching and training about 5 years. And that's the coaching and training is kind of where I feel like I really sharpened the sword, you know, as an investor, because I was only in like 3 states, you know, myself personally. Once I started coaching others, and then we later started joint venturing and funding, you know, student deals, I go from, you know, 3 states to 29 states. So I felt like that exposure, you know, just through like helping others, that exposure to new markets really helped me like understand the land market, like more macro than just my markets, right? And then I'd also like see what other people were struggling with, what common patterns of success were. So it's really interesting, you know, the last 5 years of the coaching and training, I've probably learned more than my first 5 because as I expanded that network and worked with other people, you know, although they're learning from you, everybody has their own experience, right? And transferable skill sets and their own network. So really the last 5 years, it's been, you know, really accelerated learning and growth as we've grown our network. It's been a blast, but at 10 years, it feels like 30. You know?
Let me ask you this, and I'll make this my last question here for you. You know, going through what you've gone through in the last 10 years or even before then, I mean, if you had to start today, if you had to start it all today, let's say with a limited budget, I won't set the budget, okay? What would you do to ramp up as soon as possible? And what does the first few months look like in terms of, and what would you do differently?
Oh my goodness. Okay, buckle up. Yeah, so that's the advantage, right, of hindsight, you know, and now being through market changes, market shifts, these things, right? There's definitely a lot of things I would do different. And we have like coaching clients do different, you know, but what I feel like it really starts with is, what's your individual goals like for you? What does this look like, right? Because for some people, you know, maybe you're a white coat physician and like you love your profession, You just need to scratch that entrepreneurial itch and build some wealth or a second line of income on the side. You know, you're going to have different goals than the guy who's miserable in his job, right? And is like, how quick can I get out of here? You know what I'm saying? So I think the first thing for somebody is like, what are you trying to accomplish? And if we really give thought to that, like, is this just a side hustle you're trying to make a little bit with on the side? Or is this something you want to approach it like as if you bought a franchise? Like, I want to build a business. So for me, I spend a lot of time in the beginning, like getting clear on like what this person wants. Because if you do your part, you know, and your coach or mentor does their part, right? Like, you're going to achieve what you set out to achieve. The problem is sometimes that, like, if you didn't have that clarity in the beginning, the goalposts keep moving, right? And you end up with something that doesn't look anything like you initially wanted. So for me, like early on, what I would tell somebody now is like, determine, do you want to build this as a business or is this just a side hustle? Because two forks in the road, like a big fork in the road right there, right?
And I'm assuming there's nothing wrong with either or, but no, being very clear on your why.
It's not derogatory, like, hey, if you only want to make 50 grand on the side or you want to do this as a side hustle, yep, that's fine. But like, it's a different approach, right? There's different softwares, different memberships, like different amounts of marketing and channels, you know? So you just get clear on what your goal is. And then from there, like, I would say, like, you be deliberate. And you set those goals and then you work backwards from those goals of like, how do I accomplish that, right? Get in the groups, get around people. Like if you immerse yourself in anything, I'm talking before you cut anything, any checks, like listen to this podcast, listen to a lot of podcasts, read everything free, like get acquainted. Don't pay anybody lots of money, right? Like get acquainted with the model, immerse yourself in it. And then if you're still interested, you know, find somebody who resonates with you. And get in some educational like community or program or mentor, whoever's like values align with you or teaching style aligns with you. The reality is there's so many amazing educators out there.
Yep.
But truthfully, like you got to just kind of pick one and stick with it. Because if you're dabbling in five different things, that's where there's a lot of noise and confusion is if you're trying to mix and marry five different concepts. So almost everybody out there has a great model. Right? It's just follow that whole focus acronym, Jesse, right? Following one course until success. But at first, I'll just say get immersed, become obsessed, clearly define what you want it to end up being. And then it becomes like, all right, let's, you know, take educated action on that. But it looks a whole lot different for somebody trying to build a $500,000 a year business than it does somebody who's just trying to make $50,000 as a side hustler. So yeah. the what you got to be careful of is the one size fits all education or approach.
Man, I would have never expected an answer like that. I love that one. Knowing your why and being clear on what is this for you. And sometimes it's so easy to get caught up in what other people are doing and following that or using their expectation as your own expectation.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. It's individual and it's yours. Your idea of success, you know, when I tell other people about what they do, or what we do, they're like, oh my gosh, like you could get like a commercial space, you could have a brokerage, you could have all these agents under, right? And yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I understand what we could do, right? But yeah. Like for us, it's about building a lifestyle business. Like it's about like with each decision for me personally, and again, yours might be different. The listeners might be different.
Yeah.
Like does this business model or this approach, you know, move me closer towards what I desire, like more time with my family, being at my kids' games, right? Like, does it move me towards that or away from that? Because the very first thing is like, does this like scheme actually work of land flipping? And when you get over that hump and you realize like, yes, this is valid, like several thousand or tens of thousands of people are doing this. Once right. You get over like, does this work? And then it just becomes kind of like, what's my approach and how do I want to do it?
Yeah.
So the problem is like goalposts can really move on your goals. So when you have success, as things grow, you know, get people that want to hire these huge teams. There's, you can get caught in this vanity trap. Like, mm-hmm. I have X employees, I've done X transactions, I've made this, right? So for us, it's really more about like building the business around our life in such a way that like that there's not this cost, right? There's kind of this point of diminishing returns if you go too far. So I just tell people like, hey, if you're single, got no kids, got all the time in the world, and that's your goal is to build this massive business and massive team, that's awesome. That's like what you want. Yeah. Right. But I would tell people, like you said, don't borrow other people's idea of success. Like spend a little bit of time introspecting. What's your idea of success?
Right.
And build it based on that. Right. And it's not a one size fits all. It's very custom. The only thing I'd add is that, like, early on for us, as we've kind of evolved and grown, what I learned is very early on, I kind of thought like all this preaching about mindset was just this secret stuff, and Think and Grow Rich, like just this like kind of like new age, you know, hippy dippy stuff. And I kind of dismissed it. And then later what I've learned with is our business has grown and we've had to take more risks, right? And we've done more things and we've accomplished more. I became more aware of like how your thinking is really limited by your means, you know, and your environment.
Yeah.
And I'll share what I mean. Like, so early on for me, my first goal was $10,000 a month, Jesse, because that was as massive as I could think. And that was massive. I mean, we're talking, that was a massive goal of like, hey, if I could make $10,000 a month with land on the side, that's like my goal.
Yeah.
You know, we're about 2.5 years in, we got there. And then you kind of go like, well, what do I do now? 15, 20? Like, what's the goal? You know, so you start to realize what happens is you start to realize you really place these limits on yourself. And it usually comes from like your own means, like whether that's your own bank balance,
right,
or the environment or what you're around. But when we got access to like other people's money and started doing bigger deals, I realized it's kind of like taking the governor off. Like I realized like, oh my goodness, like that's silly, right? Like the 10K a month, like, so you realize like your thinking changed as you do some transactions, you kind of get a little bit of confidence, right? As your bank account grows, that brings some confidence. You get around others that are doing better than you. You can borrow some confidence, but your mindset starts to change and you start to realize like anything's possible. It's just like, what's the cost? You know, what's the monetary and the input or time cost or opportunity cost, but anything's possible. It's just, it's in a journey, right? As you know, you're being an entrepreneur, you know, running multiple companies and businesses, like mindset, it comes down to everything. We got this playbook and all these plays and strategies, but ultimately, if you don't have the mindset to implement it, it's just like a good read, right?
Travis, I always appreciate you and always appreciate all the things that you share with us, whether it's our attendees on webinar trainings to, you know, being on the podcast or any sort of live stream. So thank you so much. If you are interested in picking up Travis's book, again, it's going to be available on Amazon and Audible. is there a launch date for that?
Yeah. So I would think by the time this drops, end of November, 2023.
Yep. Perfect.
It should be out in the website. The companion website is thelandinvestorsplaybook.com. Okay. You go there. That's where obviously tools change and stuff, right? Softwares, tools, everything changes. So in an attempt to make the book kind of evergreen, you know, we'll update the website, you know, on what the current latest, greatest data source or tool is, right? So you can go to thelandinvestorsplaybook.com. You can get signed up on the wait list if it's not out when you're listening to this.
Okay.
I think the companion website was our attempt to go beyond the book. Mm-hmm. And I can always update that and add things as people review the book and give me feedback and input, right?
And the book is The Land Investor's Playbook. And there's also a subheading, A Powerful Game Plan to Scale to Seven Figures and Beyond. That's with my good friend here and our podcast guest, Travis King. Travis, thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll make sure to have everything in the show notes for you guys. But Travis, I'm sure I'll have you on again. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks, Jesse. Appreciate it. Man, it was tight. Like I said, you know, 200 pages, 60,000 words I tried to squeeze into a podcast interview. So that's why I was talking at warp speed. I had a lot I wanted to fit in there. It's a massive read. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you.
Cheers. Before you stop this episode or hit the next episode, I want to personally thank you for listening to this episode of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast by Pebble.
If you found this helpful, we greatly appreciate any awesome reviews and ratings on whichever platform you are listening to this on. And if you have 2 minutes and wanted to step it up even more and help others, feel free to share this in other Facebook groups or pages or any communities, giving others a heads up of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast or the specific episode that may help them on their land investing journey. Once again, thanks so much for listening, and catch you on our next episode.